Welcome back to another episode of the CarterCast. I'm your host, Carter Bond. We're back again to talk about the NBA playoffs. Going to preview the conference final series. We're going to recap round two. We're back with Connor. Connor, weird round two. We have the bubble all over again. The 2020, 2021, whatever it was, the bubble's back. We have the exact same conference finals. Everyone's talking about, oh, it cancels out the bubble, blah, 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 blah. First off, before we get into that, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. You know, I'm doing good. It's a Tuesday. It's the draft lottery day. For us Hornets fans, it's the Super Bowl.
Today's
the Super Bowl. Yeah, for Hornets fans. We've been screwed lately. We deserve this. We'll get into more of this on the segment later, but I'm hopeful. I'm oddly hopeful. Also excited for the conference finals. I think Denver-Los Angeles is going to be a great series. Oh, there you go. I need to find one of those the NASCAR night jerseys and pull it out of the old closet somewhere.
But yeah, we got Lakers Warriors to talk about. We got Nuggets Suns. We're not going to bother talking about the Heat Knicks. We kind of did that on the last episode.
Yeah.
What I wanted to start with was 76ers Celtics. We're recording at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday, May 16th. Doc Rivers was fired 2 minutes before the podcast. We usually get screwed on timing whenever we hit record on these podcasts. News always comes out right after we record. We finally get one. Doc Rivers is out as the Philadelphia 76ers head coach. Sixers lose in Game 7. They were up 3-2, blow the last two games. Jason Tatum, masterclass in the fourth quarter of Game 6 and all of Game 7. Let's just talk about that series real quick. Honestly, we talked after Game 5, last episode, we had recorded right at the end of Game 5. We said, oh, wow, like, Celtics, this is a disaster. 76ers, like, everything's looking up. It's crazy in the matter of two games how different your future can look.
It is. And I always thought Boston was a deeper team. I always thought they had more talent. Embiid was clearly ailing throughout the playoffs with that foot injury, and it looks like he re-aggravated a little bit in Game 7 as well. I still thought the 76ers could steal Game 6. I thought when they went up 3-2, I was like, oh, I think they probably have him backed in their corner now. Harden was a no-show, man. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. He had 9 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists. If you're looking at the box score, it was a lot worse than that. He turned it over 5 times. A couple of the turnovers were pretty bad. And honestly, Carter, I watched 95% of that game. He just looked disinterested for most of it, is what it was. And we can harp on the other games if you want to. He had a couple dynamite games, Game 1, Game 4. Sure, give him his flowers, as the kids like to say nowadays. But Game 7 was rough. He looked disinterested, dribbling the ball up the court, handing it off, and going to stand in the corner and not trying to really create anything for himself. And that was the number one glaring issue to me, because it was clear from the start Embiid was going to have a monster game. 2 points in the second half. He was hurt, sure, but they just weren't hitting shots. And then Jason Tatum, you can't do anything about that. If he's due for a 50-point performance, there's nothing you can really do.
There's nothing you can do about that, exactly. Also, you mentioned the Harden part of it. I think that's the biggest storyline from all of this is every single year we say, oh, whatever team James Harden is on, we kind of convince ourselves into, oh, yeah, like, they'll make a run in the playoffs. James Harden, he can't be any worse than he was. And right. Then all of a sudden we have Game 1 and we're like, oh, yeah, like, playoff James Harden. Like, James Harden can play in the playoffs all of a sudden. Then we have Game 4 and we're like, yep, he's back. Like, mm-hmm, he's all of a sudden one of the best players in the league. And then we have the last three games. Yes, Game 5, he played okay. He didn't play bad. He played, you know, he distributed the ball more. I think he had like 20 and 10.
Yeah, he did enough.
Tyrese Maxey, you know, went off or whatever. But Game 6 and 7 was concerning. And you knew immediately in Game 7, when he started off 1-for-5, 1-for-6, it was, you knew immediately. These games have been interesting because, like in the Warriors game, we can talk, like the Warriors Game 6, you knew immediately when they came out they didn't have the energy to match with the Lakers. But Game 5, you saw it literally from the jump. Draymond set the tone immediately. And same thing in the Sixers-Celtics series in Game 7. Immediately from the jump, you could tell, yeah, the Sixers got off to an early lead in the first quarter, but you could tell. You could tell something was off.
Well, that's the thing about being a fan of a team with James Harden on it. It would just be so frustrating because it's not necessarily that I'm expecting a 30-point game every game, because I know he's not the James Harden from Houston. He's not what he used to be. That's fine. People get older. You decline as a player. Your role changes. That's okay. I just expect effort, especially in Game 6 and Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. If you just watched the game and watched his body language, like you just said, it was clear that he was out of it. A couple of turnovers, a couple of missed shots, and that was it for the game. He wasn't setting up the offense. They weren't running a bunch of those pick and rolls, and he wasn't aggressive attacking off of them even when they did run it. you know, he would retreat dribble, he'd hand it off to Tyrese Maxey, De'Anthony Melton, and let them do something, and he'd go stand in the corner. And I get it. I'm not saying force up a shot, like let the game flow. But when your team doesn't score for six straight minutes, eventually you just got to try to do something when you're one of the two best players on the team. Clearly Embiid, the MVP, was hurt. I just wanted to see some effort. If he shot 7 for 25, so be it. I at least wanted to see some effort in a game seven. It was a little rough to see. And then with Doc gone, I'm not surprised at all, because they just haven't lived up to expectations. We can talk about the process. Not, you know, it's been 10 years now. They just haven't made it to the Eastern Conference Finals yet. With the rosters they've had, I think that's unforgivable. And I don't blame them for letting Doc go.
Yeah, we can get into that. Last thing I want to say on the Harden part of it was, you're right, he was so disinterested. It's so frustrating watching that, because, like, how do you not give a crap in Game 7? Like, how do you not care?
I agree. I just, to have single-digit points, he let P.J. Tucker outscore him. That should tell you all you need to know right
Tucker.
There.
P.J. Tucker. P.J. Tucker outscored him. I don't know. The James Harden thing is weird. We can talk about the process and Doc Rivers real quick. You know, Doc Rivers is out. Who knows who they bring in? And, you know, it's been out there since January. Woj and Shams keep putting out little tweets saying that James Harden is going to go to Houston. James Harden likes Houston. James Harden misses Houston. He wants to go back to Houston. Seems like he's going back to Houston.
I don't know if that's the right move for Houston. I don't think Houston has anywhere to go as a franchise. Homecoming, tonight, Harden's back.
Tonight.
Yeah,
tonight determines everything for Houston, I think. Because let's say they get screwed and they don't end up in the top three, they end up with like the fifth pick, why not go get Harden?
I guess, but then you're giving Harden what, a long-term deal? And what is he, 34? After what you just saw, maybe they'll get a little bit of a pay cut, but for him to go
Harden's
to Houston...
And Harden's 34 is a lot different than Curry's 35.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how many more years do you really have left out of Harden? He can be a contributor for the next few years, sure. But I feel like any long-term deal he gets is going to be an overpayment. I really do. Seeing these last few games, I mean, maybe Houston's the right place for him. No pressure to win. He can just go, you know, homecoming. I guess Houston still loves him for what he did. I don't know. But there's not going to be any playoff success there, not for at least a few years. And by the time those young guys like Jalen Green and Jabari Smith, and if they get Wembanyama, hopefully not, go Hornets. But it'll be a few years before they're ready to compete. And I think he'll be way past his prime at that point.
I don't understand it from a Houston perspective. I mean, I know I just said that, but I just feels like it's something they're going to do.
Maybe it's like a stopgap, okay, we'll fill these next 3 years while our young guys are still, you know, in the chamber, hoping to compete in a few years. Maybe we'll just fill it with James Harden and see where we go. I don't know. I don't like that.
The only reason, like, it makes sense for them is they have to pay someone because they have an unlimited amount of cap space. They're not paying anybody at the moment. So you got to put that money somewhere. I guess it makes sense to put it into James Harden.
But I'll fight you back on this. James Harden's pretty ball dominant. Is that not going to hurt Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr.? I don't know how much faith they have in KPJ for the future, but that's going to hurt their development. They're not going to have the ball. They're not going to be jacking 25 shots a game, and I don't know if that's crucial to their development. Like, last year seemed like a dumpster fire, but James Harden is very ball dominant. You don't think that's going to hurt some of their players' development? I don't know if that's a risk I'm willing to take.
It just feels weird, like, because there's so many, like, not one scenario would surprise me. Let's say he goes to Houston and he's all of a sudden load managing, like Kawhi Leonard, only playing 35, 40 games a season, basically. Or he goes there and he's taking a billion shots. I could just see him going there and not giving a crap about basketball. Like, if I had to take a guess, that's what it would be.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, watching the playoffs this year and watching Game 7, it doesn't seem like he really wants to put in that extra gear to try to win a title. You know, he came out in the press conferences before the year saying, oh, him and Embiid, you know, this is the year, first full year together, whatever. It just doesn't seem like he has the extra gear anymore. And that the year that they lost to the Warriors in Game 7, that was his best shot. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it anymore. He's getting up there in age. There's too much talent in the rest of the league. A lot of teams are set up better than the Sixers or the Rockets, especially if he goes there. I don't see it anymore. I think his championship window may be closed, Carter. Clip it.
Yeah, I think it is too. The other thing I want to talk about the Sixers with the Joel Embiid part of it, a lot of people are blaming Joel Embiid, saying, oh, he shouldn't have been MVP, it should have been Jokic. We do this revisionist history every single year. Every single year for the past 10 years, it was, oh, James Harden won MVP. That should have gone to LeBron James. You see LeBron James, he's averaging 35, 10, and 10 in the playoffs. It's not, it's a regular season award, first off. It's a regular season award. It's so, like, we're so blinded by recency bias sometimes, and I'm guilty of it constantly. I mean, every time we do this show after a game four of a series and the team's up 3-1 or whatever, I'm saying, oh, no, it's over, done. Or if a team wins game one, in my mind, I'm like, well, I just saw what I saw, so no way they could turn it around. But even though this playoffs, we've been wrong so many times. But going back to that, it's Joel, like, people are going after Joel Embiid, and Sixers fans are like, oh, let's trade him, blah, blah, blah. That's just Philly sports fans. I'm not that upset about Joel Embiid because, one, he definitely was hurt. Like, there's no way he wasn't hurt. And also, let's say you do trade him. You're not getting Joel Embiid back. You're getting less than Joel Embiid's value, no matter what. You're not getting more than Joel Embiid.
I think you can win with Joel Embiid, and I think we're going to see a lot more. So he won the MVP now, and I think rightfully so. It's a regular season award. The voters did what they did. They didn't want to give Jokic a three-peat. That's fine. It's a regular season award, so we can't get mad about that. You can't look back and have, you know, hindsight's 20/20. It's not a playoff award. But I think the Sixers can win with Embiid. I think now that he's won an MVP in the next few years, we're going to see a lot more, like, quote-unquote load managing. You know, maybe he'll play 60, 65 games a year and take off, you know, the last month of the year, kind of like we saw Jokic do this year, where he clearly didn't care. But I think now that Embiid has that under his belt, it's going to be a lot less effort during the regular season and maybe trying to save himself and, you know, be healthy for the playoffs, actually. Because it feels like the last few years, he had the orbital fracture, and now this year with the knee, he's always been hurt in the playoffs. Some, like, he's been playing, but he's, like, been nagging injury, and that's true for maybe everybody in the league. But I think we're going to see a lot more load managing out of him in the next few years.
I think you're 100% right on that, especially now that he won his MVP. I think the regular season is going to be very irrelevant for Joel Embiid. I think he just wanted that one MVP, and now it's like, okay, that grind's not worth it. Like, you see it with kind of Jokic now. I mean, Jokic never really cared about it, but, like, you see it with Giannis as well. They don't, like, when they don't really care about it after they win it once.
No, because
once you win it, you win it. Like, you're the MVP, whatever. But the Joel Embiid part of it, it's interesting because he's sneaky a tough fit with other players. Like, who do you put around Joel Embiid? Because he's not, like, he kind of demands the ball. He slows down the offense quite a bit. He's not great on the pick and roll, but he's an unbelievable post presence. You kind of just need another ISO guy like a Devin Booker type.
Or James Harden? You think James Harden would pair good there? That's Trae Young? On paper, James Harden and Embiid are, like, I think, a pretty good match. You know, they both play at a very slow pace. Embiid's not sprinting up and down the floor most times. Harden loves to walk the ball up and, you know, set up the offense. I don't know who you pair with Embiid. He's a tough superstar to pair. I think the year they had Jimmy Butler was their best shot. I'm telling you right now, the year they had Jimmy Butler was their best shot. They can still construct a winning roster around Embiid. But I just don't know if PJ Tucker is going to be, you know, should be in the starting lineup. Tobias Harris, there's a lot of question marks. He played pretty well as you can for a game seven. I just don't know if those are the pieces around Embiid. You know, if they let Harden walk or if Harden decides to walk, they have Tyrese Maxey. They're going to have some cap space to play around a little bit with. I don't know. This is a tough spot, especially for a new coach coming in with Doc gone. It's a tough spot to be in, Carter. I don't know who to pair with Embiid, but I still believe you can build a winning roster around him at this stage of his career.
Let me come up with a fake trade real quick I just thought about on the top of my head.
Okay.
All right. Philly sends Harden to Houston. It's a three-way trade. Philly sends Harden to Houston. Trae Young goes to Philly. And then Atlanta receives Jalen Green and, let's say, like, Kevin Porter Jr. or something.
Yeah, if you're Houston, you don't do that.
Houston would have to get another piece back, too. Maybe a couple picks.
Yeah, if you're Houston, you don't do that at all. Because that's Jalen Green, you know, you're still putting your future in him. You're still putting your stock in him. You took it, what was he, number two overall? I know he hasn't been.
Depending on how tonight goes, I think Jalen Green might get traded.
I don't think so.
One of those young guys is definitely getting traded. Kevin Porter Jr. is probably the likely suspect.
I guess. But who are they going to replace him with? I mean, if they get Scoot Henderson, James then Harden. Yeah, sure. I cannot get behind the James Harden Houston thing. I don't think there would be any type of trade scenario with that. I think it'd be like he's walking from Philly and they're not going to re-sign him, and then he just signs in free agency with Houston.
Well, that's what it's going to be. I'm not agreeing with the James Harden. If I'm a team, James Harden's one of the last players I want on my team. But it's just something that's going to happen. Like Dallas getting Kyrie. If I'm Mark Cuban, I don't want Kyrie Irving, but It still happens.
But Houston's window to win is nowhere near James Harden's win. Like, James Harden
but
needs
they
to be...
But the thing is, they have to pay someone, so you might as well just pay James Harden. I mean, you got to put this money somewhere. That you have to spend a minimum amount.
That's a losing mentality, Carter. It's a losing mentality.
Who are we the fan? What's our favorite team? What's our favorite NBA team?
You know what? Harden to Charlotte. Why don't we just trade for him?
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry. I've talked myself into Chris Paul to Charlotte already. We texted about that. We'll talk about that one a little bit later when we talk about the Nuggets, Suns, or whatever. I did want to last thing on the Doc Rivers thing. Do you know, like, every coaching job's available all of a sudden, so you can't even, like, guess where each coach goes. Nick Nurse is going to have his pick of the litter. Usually it would be a thing where he goes and does the ESPN halftime show for a year and, you know, or the NBA TV Tuesday night crew and, like, he's an analyst for a year and then he picks his job. There's so many open, solid jobs right now. He's going to have whatever he wants.
I was telling you this before the show. I think it's going to be a big old wheel of top tier, big name coaches, and they just shift around. I think maybe, you know, let's see Monty Williams in Philadelphia. Let's see Mike Budenholzer in Phoenix. And let's see Doc Rivers in Milwaukee. Like, it's just going to be a big wheel, and Nick Nurse will be somewhere. But I think three of those guys end up on pretty prominent roles again this coming year. I don't know, Carter. I think it's going to be a big wheel of just, all right, we'll try this.
There's going to be one really bad hire. One really bad hire. You saw the Suns say that they're looking at Isaiah Thomas. If Isaiah Thomas is the Phoenix Suns head coach, they're doomed. He's going to be the worst coach in NBA history. That would be the worst hire in NBA coaching history. When you have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, and you bring in Isaiah Thomas, who's proven to be an awful coach, awful GM, awful anything in management or in coaching.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that's the right move. Not with managing those egos. I mean, you have a very high-profile team. You know, DeAndre Ayton's still there. He's clearly very fragile.
Chris Paul's gone.
Chris Paul's, 100% gone. That would be a weird hire. Another one would be Mark Jackson. I just don't see it anymore. I don't see it. I saw somebody tweet about this. I forget who it was. Talking about, his pace of play was this low, and he had Steph Curry as his point guard, and blah, blah, blah. He's just not – I don't think he's meant to coach anymore. It's been, 10 years since he got fired from Golden State? That is a long time to be out of a job.
I mean, I'm not a Mark Jackson guy. I think that's very, very clear. He's one of my favorite analysts to make fun of. I kind of don't want him to leave TV because it's kind of fun watching a game. And
I kind of like him. Yeah, I like him on the broadcast crew. I agree. Selfishly, I like him on the broadcast crew. I don't know if he's going to be the successful coach for a team. I know he was a finalist last year for Sacramento. They made the right choice of Mike Brown.
They made the right choice.
Oh my God. They dodged a bullet. But I don't see that. I'm interested to see what happens, though.
Okay. Yeah. And the other last thing on that series overall, I know I said last thing like four times. Game seven of that series was crazy because the loser of that game loses their job.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was
a coaches leave town game.
I 100% agree. If Joe Mazzulla loses that game, he becomes a scapegoat. He's gone. Jaylen Brown probably. I know he can sign the Supermax now that he made All NBA. He's probably that's a big situation for Boston. If they lose that game, I think Mazzulla's gone. I think Jaylen Brown, there's some rumblings about him leaving. I don't know if they necessarily blow it up, but it's a big, big, big reflection point for them if that happens.
Because we're going to look back on that game. Let's say the Celtics do go on and win the finals. We're going to look back. You can look back on that game six, fourth quarter by Tatum and say, this saved everything. Like, if he doesn't go off in this game six, fourth quarter, their history is completely different. Jaylen Brown's probably gone. Joe Mazzulla is 1,000% gone. Like, everything is different in Boston. But they win it, so it is what it is. If KD's foot was behind the line, then they probably would have won the title too. So you can't
I will die by that.
Lakers-Warriors real quick. I know we kind of talked about it on the last show because we kind of assumed that it was going to be over. Lakers were going to win. Warriors fought back, win game five, they win game five, they lost game six in LA. It feels like an eternity ago that happened. Six was miserable. It was miserable across the board. You texted me the whole time during it saying, we're watching the end. We're watching the 2014 Heat come to a close.
And you saw, not even 24 hours after the game, the reports came out that, if Klay Thompson sticks around in Golden State, they're going to want him to take a pay cut.
Rightfully so.
I don't know, release it that soon after the game, that's a little rough, but that's the right move. If you're looking at the game, Carter, game six, there was two people in double figures for the Warriors. It was Curry with 32, and then Dante DiVincenzo with 16. Klay Thompson, abysmal, 3 for 19. Andrew Wiggins, 6 points. He was clearly hurt, doesn't matter. they just don't have the right pieces. Curry came out, started jacking shots. You could tell from the get-go that he was the only one that was going to be able to... Like, Curry would have to have put on, like, a 60-point masterclass. L.A. was on a mission.
Even then.
Yeah, L.A. was on a mission. Good for them. Austin Reeves, you know, playing at a different level. Russell has some good moments. They have some dudes, Carter, and I'll just touch on the Warriors one more time. I think we did see the end of it in real time. I know Draymond Green is saying, oh, I want to retire a Warrior. Something's going to happen, whether it be Jordan Poole wanting out, whether it be Draymond Green not re-signing, whether it be Klay Thompson getting his feelings hurt, being asked to take a pay cut and trying to go somewhere else, trying to prove he's still him. I don't know. It was rough to see because you could tell from the end of the first quarter it was over.
Let me paint you a scenario real quick. You mentioned who's going to be the scapegoat that ends up getting forced out. I think it's going to be Jordan Poole. I don't think they're going to let Draymond go. I think they need Draymond's energy. They understand how important Draymond is to this team. Jordan Poole, he was unplayable, and he's making that much money. They need to get off the books for Jordan Poole. They have to, because or else they're just paying insane luxury tax, whatever. Anyhow, let me paint you another trade.
Okay.
I said it before that Jordan Poole has a lot of Houston Rocket in him. Could we see Jordan Poole in the Houston Rockets?
Yeah, we could, but I don't for what though? Like, he's not going to get like a Jalen Green in return.
No, but I think you take anything. I think you just want off the money.
I think so too. Is Jordan Poole a Detroit Piston? Is Jordan Poole a Houston Rocket? You know, where does he go? I don't know. Maybe a San Antonio.
Maybe a Hornet.
Oh, please no.
Terry Rozier, Jordan Poole, straight up. Who says no?
I don't say no.
I don't say no either. Is that the most knucklehead backcourt of all time if it was Jordan Poole and LaMelo Ball?
I mean, it's just throwing full court passes, jacking threes from 35 feet with 20 seconds left on the shot clock. I mean, that would be an all-time team.
The hottest chicks of all time sitting courtside at every Charlotte Hornets game.
Oh, my God. I can't even fathom it. No defense, though. Minimal defense in a backcourt you'll ever see. As far as the Warriors go, Carter, here's the thing. The Warriors management's smart. I think Bob Myers is smart. They got a good structure up there, obviously. When do they decide this era's over? When do they decide the Curry, Clay, Draymond Green? Obviously, you're not going to trade Curry, but as far as like Clay, Draymond Green, this kind of core of guys, when do they decide to move on? Because they got Moody, Kuminga, and you know Jordan Poole was supposed to pan out a little differently. And then they had Wiseman. That was supposed to be their next step. So they were already thinking about it. And they didn't piece those guys together. They didn't pack them together for another star or another trade package. They kept them around, and I think that's for a reason. Now, none of them have really panned out how they want, but clearly the seeds have been planted that it's going to be time to move on eventually. Is that now? I don't know if they give it two more years, because I don't know. Curry's still going to be great, but do they try to make that move to the next stage of their franchise now? I don't know if I see a better time.
I don't think you do. Like, we always talk about, like, after a team loses a playoff series, they need to make this drastic change and all this. There's not much they can do stuff, but they're not going to. There's too much sentimental value, as, like, cheesy as that is to say, but
yeah,
there's too much sentimental value with Clay. Clay is not going to leave Steph. If anything happens, Draymond and Jordan Poole leave, but I don't even see that happening. The only thing I see happening is Jordan Poole being gone. They get, you know, something basic in return, and they run it back. Because the thing is...
But they're trending down, Carter. They're trending down.
They are trending down, but I would still run it back. Steph Curry is playing his best basketball in his career, arguably, right now. The way he feels the game, the way he understands defenses now, the way he plays at his pace now. It's not constant running. He's not like Speedy Gonzalez running around. It's his pace, which is like he's running offense... No, I think they run it back. I really do think you should run it back. I think that's crazy to say. I know. What should they do? Like, what would they do? You're taking a bigger risk getting rid of these guys early, I think, than running it back.
I think that's a fair point. But if they get Jordan Poole off the books, and, you know, if they get Klay Thompson to take a pay cut, if Draymond walks, who's not going to want to come play with Steph Curry for a few years? You know, they could try to, like, rebuild that team around him. That's the thing. I don't know. I haven't, like, really dug into this. It's just off the top of my head. But, you know, Curry's got a few years in his prime left, it looks like.
Harrison Barnes?
Festus Ezeli? But he's got a few years left, Carter, at the top of his game. Do you not want to try to restructure this team? Like, I get it. Run it back. Sentimental value. That's fine. But if it doesn't work out next year, and you'll know pretty quickly if it will or not, I don't want to waste another year of Curry. I don't want to waste it. And I'm not saying this year is a waste.
That's what I'm saying. You have to.
But they're trending down. But they're trending down. They're trending down. I don't know. I don't want to waste a career year out of Curry again.
I wonder if losing Jordan Poole will be addition by subtraction.
I mean, I think that's fair. It depends on what they get back. But I think Moses Moody, Kuminga, they could still be contributing guys. I don't know if they're going to be the next face of the team, like Curry and Clay and Draymond. But
and the other thing, too, is like I don't think it should be, go under the radar that Andrew Wiggins was out for 2 months right before the playoffs. It had no – and we what's the one thing we always talk about, Connor, in the playoffs? Continuity.
Continuity.
They didn't have the continuity
yeah.
with Andrew Wiggins back. That matters.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I'm not saying they shouldn't run it back. But if it doesn't work out next year, I think they got to look themselves in the mirror and be like, okay.
I think, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think you give it one more year. I think you say, all right, let's do it again. Let's get rid of Jordan Poole, like, bad contract, whatever. I think it's a fairly easy contract to get off of just because the free agent pool isn't great this year.
Yeah, but Jordan Poole tanked his trade stock this year, so.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything back, but he's. I think you can get off of him without losing money, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah. I don't hate that.
Because I'm looking at the top free agents right now are, what, Chris Middleton?
Eh, bleh.
Russell Westbrook? Harden?
Yeah,
Kyrie? Fred VanVleet?
None of those guys make sense for Golden State.
I'm looking at it right here. I mean, this free agent class is awful. If you're listening right now, I'm going to read through some of these names, and this might be one of the worst free agent classes of all time, even though I see Gary Trent's in there. I kind of like Gary Trent. Westbrook, James Harden, Middleton, Kyrie Irving, Porzingis. That would actually be fun on Golden State. I will say that. That would be
fun
on Golden State.
Porzingis would be cool. I think
any big white guy that can shoot, you always say, is going to be awesome on Golden State. D'Angelo Russell, Kevin Love, Vucevic, Draymond Green,
man, if this was 2017 or 2018, this would be a stacked free agency class.
Luol Deng, technically still a free agent. Jordan Clarkson's going to be a free agent. Utah's going to re-sign him. Kyle Kuzma, Christian Wood, Swarm Legend, Derrick Rose, Malik Beasley, like Dylan Brooks.
None of those,
the Warriors.
None of those guys are really tickling me, Carter.
Seth Curry.
He did not get used enough this year. If you're Golden State, you got to go after a couple of those like role player guys, but I guess if you want to run it back with the same core, I'm not going to be mad, but you're going to know pretty quick if it's going to work out or not. If they start out 0-20 on the road, then, you know, they might need to pull the plug.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is like going back to that free agency stuff is that if I'm the Warriors, my plan would be get rid of Jordan Poole. I don't care what you get back, even if someone just takes it for free, basically, and you get whatever back. As long as someone takes Jordan Poole's contract, use that money and go get convince guys to take mid-level contracts like a Gary Trent maybe that want to win a title.
Yeah, I think Gary Trent would be a good fit for them. Anybody that can space the floor and play off Curry like that, I think it's a good fit for them.
Seth Curry to the Warriors, baby. Speak it into existence. Real quick, Nuggets, Suns. Nuggets are awesome. We'll talk about the Nuggets in the Lakers-Nuggets series. Let's talk about the Suns real quick. Monty Williams is out. Another coach gone, fired, whatever. Steven Jackson said it was a racist fire. Whatever. This is the stupidest comment I've ever heard. You can't perform with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. That's your fault.
Yeah.
Suns, what do they do? Do you trade both Ayton and Paul? Like, what do you get for Ayton? Ayton's kind of in the Jordan Poole camp where, like, his trade value is nothing. Chris Paul, very much getting towards the end. I'll talk about this in a second, but I want Chris Paul to the Hornets. What should the Suns do, though?
This is a loaded question. I think the first thing you do is you got to find out how committed DeAndre Ayton is. And I don't feel good about that from my initial readings. You got to find out if he wants to be there. And if not, you got to decide his future. That's priority number one. Because with a team with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, you can't be worrying about the tertiary guy on your team. Yeah, he's a former number one pick. But you can't have all this drama wrapped up in, oh, is DeAndre Ayton staying? Oh, he had a bad game. He got bitched in the fourth quarter. He's upset now. You can't be worrying about that. There can't be distractions from lesser guys on the team in a stacked team like this. So they're going to find out if he's really committed or not. And if they can recommit him to the team, then fine, keep him. I just don't know if he necessarily fits really well with Durant and Booker. I touched on this a lot last podcast. Find out what you can get for him, gauge the market, and then the next thing you got to decide is Chris Paul. He's making a lot of money. He's older. He doesn't fit the flow of the game that Booker and Durant have. I really went in depth on this last podcast. He slows the game down too much. So if you're Phoenix, you got to really look yourself in the mirror and say, what can we get for Chris Paul? Is DeAndre Ayton committed enough? And if not, what can we get for him? Because you have to reshape this team around Durant and Booker. You have about 2 or 3 years left of Durant in this title window, in my opinion.
I just don't know what they can get.
Well, that's the thing, you know. But clearly, he signed the offer sheet with Indiana last year. He wasn't gung ho on coming back to Phoenix. So, what are you going to do?
I don't know. Phoenix is in a kind of a bad spot, but at the same time, you're not in a bad spot anytime you have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. Like, everyone can say, oh, you know, you lost these assets of the first round picks, Cam Johnson, whatever. You have Kevin Durant. Like, you're going to be there. It's just, how can you makeshift, piece this around, get guys that are committed, get guys that are willing to play their roles in exchange for an Ayton and Chris Paul?
Well, they really hodgepodge together their bench this year. And I know they did it on the fly because they got Durant mid-year, gave up Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges. But even the last game of the year, they were not sure what the rotation was. They were giving Terrence Ross, TJ Warren, Shaman. They were giving all these guys like 4 or 5 minutes sometimes a game. Like, oh, go out there for a couple of possessions. We'll see if you have it. And if not, then we'll go to the next bench guy. I think a full offseason will help them kind of alleviate that problem a little bit. I'm not saying they're going to get a crazy, insane sixth man of the year candidate. But if you can just get somebody like Bruce Brown for the Nuggets, who just comes off the bench, he's steady, he can play 30 minutes a game if you have to in a playoff game, that's kind of what they need. They need some kind of stability on the bench. And I think an offseason where they can really step back and like look at their team needs, I think that's going to help them because, you know, doing it mid-year is near impossible. So I'm not out on the Phoenix Suns. I think with Durant and Booker next year, with a full offseason under their belt, I think they're going to be tough to handle, but they've got to rebuild the supporting cast around them. And I just think, yeah, the Chris Paul thing is one area, but the DeAndre Ayton thing, I think, could be a huge problem. Because if he goes into next year and he's not bought in, that's just a distraction, and you don't want that.
And it seems like for what DeAndre Ayton's bringing to the table, you can find someone literally 20% of his price, it almost feels like.
Yeah, you want to talk about not trying? Talk about James Harden and not giving effort? DeAndre Ayton, I was speechless at some of the effort he put in.
Let's have them meet up in Houston. Like James Harden, Christian Wood, DeAndre Ayton, Jordan Poole. What a
screw
team.
It. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, let's ship everybody to Houston, the island of misfit toys, and let's just see what happens.
And they just all buy in for some reason. Mark Jackson's their head coach.
Oh, yeah, of course. Isaiah Thomas is their GM.
I mentioned this like 3 times. Would you take Chris Paul in Charlotte?
I think we're going to be split on this because I'm going to say no. I don't think he fits the Hornets' play style. You know, they're a run-and-gun team. You know, we talk about LaMelo. Miles Bridges is probably back this year. They're a run-and-gun team, young team, and Chris Paul needs the ball in his hands 85% of the time, slows the pace down. I don't think there's any chance he could play with LaMelo, maybe as like a veteran point guard off the bench playing 15, 20 minutes a game. But, you know, we saw that with Tony Parker. It didn't really work out. Tony Parker and Chris Paul are different stages when TP came to Charlotte, but I don't see it, Carter. I don't think it's a good fit, and I think I don't see the vision. I think Dennis Smith was really good for them this year, and I don't see a reason to move on from that.
I don't think it happens, but – and I'm one of the most anti-Chris Paul people there are. I don't hate Chris Paul to Charlotte just because what is LaMelo known this whole time? He just knows losing. There's no expectations that – he doesn't know how to win yet. That's what Chris Paul can kind of bring in. Like, look at the difference between Shai Gilgeous before Chris Paul came in and after. He's a totally different player. I think you could kind of compare it to, like, when Tony Parker came in with Kemba Walker. I mean, Tony Parker was on way less money or whatever, so that made way more sense. But I think Chris Paul can bring that kind of intensity, and, I keep saying these cheesy cliche things, but bringing in a culture and bringing in a different intensity that I don't think LaMelo has.
Maybe, but if you're Chris Paul, do you want to go to Charlotte when you're not going to win anything? You're not going to make the playoffs, most likely.
If you're Chris Paul, do you have a choice?
I don't know. I mean, I think his name is big enough to where he kind of does. But then again, he went to OKC that year, and everybody thought they were going to be, you know, a 15-win team, and they made the playoffs, and they damn near won Game 7. So
exactly. And also, with both of those guys are injury-prone. If one of them's hurt, have one of them slot in. I just don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, his contract's monstrous, and it's insane. We'd have to get off the Hayward and Rozier money, which I'm totally fine with, by the way. I'm not opposed to that at all. And also, like we keep saying about the Rockets, a lot of it comes down to tonight.
Yeah, it does. We'll see the shape of a lot of teams' future tonight by who wins the lottery and where teams end up. you know, there are definitely some positives to Chris Paul coming to Charlotte. I think, you know, being the adult in the room, teaching guys, you know, a winning culture. Sure, that's fine. It's just hard for me to see from a basketball perspective.
Yeah, I think that's fair because he does slow it down, like you mentioned. But I just think from the culture standpoint, something has to change in Charlotte. That would be a positive change. They need to bring something else in there because someone needs to get – it's just got to be a different mentality. Like, yeah, it's a fun league pass team, but you don't want to be the fun league pass team. You want to be the team competing. So
right.
It's a whole different story. We can do that later on. We don't need to talk anymore about the Hornets. We just have to pray for tonight. You ready to talk about the conference finals?
Yeah, let's do it.
Lakers-Nuggets. Let's start in the West. Lakers-Nuggets, it's on tonight. Nuggets are favored in this series. I think Nuggets are -160, so bet 160, win 100. The Lakers are +140, so bet 100, you win 140 to win this series. I'll just start off. Let's do picks before we even get into the analysis of everything. Nuggets. I like the Nuggets a lot.
I think I'm going the Nuggets too, dude. I think the Lakers are going to
play. You were big on the Lakers. You said the Lakers are going to make the finals.
I'm torn right now, Carter, because they showed me a lot last round, but Golden State was a broken team. Yeah, they had the big names, but you clearly
you know who
they
else
didn't
was
have
a broken team? Memphis.
Who? Oh, 100%. We don't have to get into the whole jaw thing, but then again, though, you play who's in front of you. The Lakers have played who's in front of them. That's not any fault of their own. I think this series will be competitive, but Denver looks like a well-oiled machine right now, and it's going to be hard-pressed for me to pick against them. I think for the Lakers to win, LeBron's going to have a couple of vintage games. And I think AD cannot disappear for a game.
No.
He cannot disappear.
Especially on the road. The road games is what's going to be the difference in this series. I think Denver's home court advantage, and you can say what you want, like altitude, whatever, that doesn't matter. Like, these guys are in such good shape. Altitude matters that first game. The third quarter, you're out of breath, man. Like, it doesn't matter how good a shape you are, you're feeling it.
We'll see it tonight. But here's the thing. Does this not worry you, Carter? The league wants Boston, Los Angeles in the finals.
They want Boston, Los Angeles. We mentioned that two episodes ago. That was 2 weeks ago. And we said,
yeah, we called it
NBA. If the NBA wants to rig the NBA finals, what makes the most sense? Lakers, Celtics, LeBron in potentially his last finals ever. You get the classic rivalry, Lakers, Celtics, Jason Tatum going for his first title, redemption tour for the Boston Celtics with a new head coach. You're going to bump up those ratings just in time for the next NBA media deal. Makes way too much sense for it to be Lakers, Celtics. That's why in my heart of hearts, I really do think it's going to be Lakers Celtics, but from the basketball I've watched, I think Denver wins this series because they are playing. You mentioned it; it's a well-oiled machine. They're playing out of their minds. Like, Jokic is getting guys open all the time. They have so many open shots. If his name is not Nikola Jokic, it seems like every player is shooting a wide open shot.
I'm going against you, Carter. I'm picking the Lakers this series. I wanted to, and you scared me at the start.
Flip-flop. Okay, yeah. Mitt Romney.
I want to say it, and then you're like, oh, wow, you're going against the Lakers. You know what? You're right. I am picking the Lakers. I think AD is going to give Jokic problems with his length. I think if AD can stay healthy, Jokic is never going to be stopped. But I think he'll be able to bother him enough. And who do the Nuggets have to really guard AD? You can put Jokic on him, big body, but Aaron Gordon's probably going to be on LeBron. Michael Porter Jr. can't guard a traffic cone, so he's probably going to be on Vanderbilt or whoever else starts. If Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, if each of them have a game or two, Schroeder, if they can, you know, each have a game in this series, I think the Lakers could steal one in Denver, maybe game two. I think LeBron knows it's one of his last runs, Carter, and I don't think he's going to hold back anything.
Or do you think the NBA knows it's LeBron's last run?
Well, that's also true. I think there's that factor as well. You don't think they want to see Celtics-Lakers, two huge markets, two of the oldest teams in the finals? I mean, I think that has to be taken into account. But as far as from a basketball perspective goes, if the Lakers stay healthy, I really think AD can give Jokic problems. And that whole Denver machine runs through Jokic. And then you got Jamal Murray, who's been questionable with an illness the last couple of games. Yeah, he played last time out. He's questionable tonight with an illness. What's going on there? He has a tendency to kind of have up and down games since the bubble. It's just hard for me to trust that. And the way the Lakers are playing right now, with their role guys stepping up, hitting shots, they're just playing with that confidence. We've touched on it with the Miami Heat. The Lakers are also playing with that confidence, like, oh, we're better than this team. You know, we got LeBron, we got AD, they're playing at the height of their powers. All we have to do is do our job and we can get to the finals. I think this Lakers team is good, Carter. I think they're good. I think it's going to be a bar fight of the series. But I really think AD can give Jokic problems if he can stay on the court.
I was wrong about the Lakers and the Warriors series. I'm not afraid to admit that. And so, you know, I was wrong. Whatever. But I just keep going back to the Nuggets is, yeah, AD's length is going to stop Jokic, but he's killed everybody in his path. He's killed everybody in his path, and he looks like a totally different player. Like, there is a different level of intensity with Nikola Jokic right now. Honestly, like, the biggest problem for me where I keep getting worried about is the Lakers. It's going to be rigged for the Lakers, isn't it? And we're going to get LeBron another ring, and then the Jordan debates become real.
I don't know if I want to go as far to say it's going to be rigged, but from a league perspective, new TV rights deal coming up. You want?
I mean,
Lakers
I'll be
Celtics.
Honest. I watched that first half in the Warriors-Lakers game. That's one of the worst officiated halves I've ever watched in my life.
I mean, we can say that for the Boston 76ers game as well.
Exactly,
it didn't end up
dude,
mattering.
That one may have been worse, actually. Backtrack. That one may have been worse.
It didn't end up mattering, but we've seen some pretty poorly officiated games, and you hate to see that in the playoffs decide the outcome of a game. Thankfully, it didn't in Game 7.
It
didn't
in either game.
No, it didn't, but in a tight game, I don't know, Carter. Austin Reeves is going to slot in for one of those charges whenever somebody's in the air, and then
don't
what?
Get me started.
I don't know, dude.
Started.
I'm sticking with the Lakers.
This feels like seven games, though, doesn't it?
I think so.
Seven games,
and they're two completely different teams from the bubble. Like, yeah, they have the same headline guys, same superstars, but there's two completely different teams.
That's what's frustrating because everyone's like trying to bring up the whole bubble argument, even though like I said, because it is the same thing. It's hard not to. It's the obvious thing, but. When you bring up the bubble part of it, it's so different. Like this is not the same as a bubble. So like we talked about last time, does this take the asterisks off the bubble season if LeBron wins this title? Like it doesn't matter. You're comparing apples to oranges. That's totally different.
And we don't have to have the full bubble argument today, but I will argue that like that was a pure form of basketball. There was no home court advantage. It was really just 5-on-5. I know home court advantage is a big part of it. But it's just 5-on-5 guys competing, and there was no like why
so
is
there? Wait. So you're saying 5-on-5 guys competing? So at a Mormon LDS pickup group, like
that's real basketball.
That's real basketball. Okay, I just need to get that confirmed.
Closed doors, no crowd. It's just intensity, Carter.
There's sometimes a crowd. There's sometimes wives there for some reason. It's kind of awkward.
True.
but yeah, I like the Nuggets here. Jamal Murray's got to play out of his mind. The other thing is, you mentioned AD can't disappear. Michael Porter Jr. can't disappear for long stretches. He can, I mean, maybe a game or two, when the Lakers win, that's okay. But, like, he's got to perform. He's got to be that difference maker because, yes, KCP's been playing out of his mind, but I don't know if you can rely on that in a whole series.
I don't think so either. And for Michael Porter Jr., he can't shoot them out of a game. And I've seen him do that before. You come down and jack a few contested threes, and all of a sudden the team's got four fast break points in a matter of 30 seconds. That's a big swing. So you got to be careful in a conference finals like this. He can't – if he's got it going, then sure, he's a great offensive option. He can't shoot them out of a game, though, because I don't think they'll be able to recover from that.
I'm disappointed. I have to fly to Carolina tonight, so I'm gonna miss the Lakers-Nuggets game. I'm going to have to watch it on recording when I get home, when I get off the plane. I'm going to land off the plane. Of course I'm on American Airlines. Of course I'm on American, and they don't have TVs, and I can't watch the game on their flights, and their Wi-Fi sucks. I can't watch the game. I don't even know if I'm going to see the draft lottery.
Oh, you'll feel it. There'll be like a shift in the universe when the Hornets win. There'll be like a light shining down from the heavens. Riddle me this, Carter, for game one tonight. Does this not feel like a Nuggets blowout win? Like,
it feels like a Nuggets blowout. I was going to say it. It feels exactly like a Nuggets blowout.
Mid-third quarter.
Feel out. Yep.
Mid-third quarter, Nuggets going like a 15-2 run. They go up by 17. Los Angeles doesn't even play the starters in the fourth. Altitude problem. It kind of feels like a game one blowout.
This has no stats behind it, obviously. But doesn't it feel like if Denver blows them out tonight, the Lakers are going to win game two? But then
yeah,
if
it does.
It's a close, if Denver wins in a close game, Denver is going to win game two as well.
Oh, I like that. I like that. I like that a lot. I think if Denver blows
no
them out.
Behind it.
Well, the home crowd's going to be insane tonight. The altitude problem. Sure, they've had a few days to rest, but Denver's going to come out gunning. I think Jamal Murray probably has a huge game tonight. If I had to bet on it, which I did, I think Jamal Murray probably has to have a huge game tonight.
D-Lo first to 10.
Oh, I love that bet, by the way, plus 1,300. But I think the Denver crowd's really going to make a difference, and they're going to come out gunning. Conference finals. They're here. I think this is a 20-point Nuggets win. I really do. And I don't know how that plays for the rest of the series, but it just feels like that.
You should do the thing. We talked about it last year's where let's take Denver. You could take Denver to win game one, but Lakers to win the series. You probably get like plus 700 on that.
I'll definitely be looking into that because it worked out. It worked out with Sacramento and Golden State. I took Sacramento to win game one and Golden State to win the series, and that worked out. So,
anything else on this series? I have Nuggets in seven.
I got Lakers in seven. It does feel like seven games, though. It does feel like seven games, but
I'm so excited for the Jokic Anthony Davis matchup. That's going to be fascinating.
I just hope everybody stays healthy, and it should be an all-timer.
It should. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Celtics Heat Eastern Conference Finals. I've talked to many Celtics fans. It's interesting because 50% of them are scared, and then 50% of them see the 8 next to the Heat name and the 8 seed next to the Heat and say, "Oh yeah, we're going to win in 4 or 5." Like no problem. Like Celtics are going to win, no problem. Connor, you've been anti-Heat this whole time. You've always been anti-Heat, anti-Kyle Lowry. You've been against them this whole time. You said no chance they can beat the Bucks, no chance they can beat the Knicks, no chance they can beat the Celtics, or are you backtracking now?
I'm not going to backtrack. You know, no chance is a strong word, and I have been pretty down on the Heat, and I've been eating my words. You know, I was on the Lakers in the Western Conference. I'm on fire in the West, except the Suns lost, but I've been on the Lakers. The Eastern Conference, man, the Heat have been killing me. I don't think there's no chance they beat the Celtics. I'm definitely going Boston in 6 games, though. I think the Heat steal one in Boston and win one at home. But I think in the end, the Celtics, you know, I think game 6 will be tight, but I think the Celtics will pull away at the end. I think Celtics in 6. I know Jimmy Butler has that it factor, and last year they're going to redeem themselves from last year, and they were a Jimmy Butler 3-pointer away from winning that series. But I just think Boston maybe figured something out a little bit in the Philly series. I'm a little worried about them playing down to their competition, which they've done all playoffs since the Atlanta series even. I'm a little worried about that, but I do think they pull away and win in 6. I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk, though. All the Boston fans that are like, oh, they're an 8 seed, they're dead. I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk, but Boston in 6.
I'm going Boston in 5.
Really?
I'm going Boston in 5. I think there's going to be a big momentum swing for the Celtics now. We saw the energies about the shift or whatever Jaylen Brown always tweets out. I think there is going to be a big shift in the Celtics team. I think they're going to come out with a different energy and different intensity in this Eastern Conference Finals now that they know, like, oh, crap, we almost blew that. Like, we were this close away from getting there. We don't want to be back there. I think we're seeing a different Tatum. I think we're saying everybody's going to buy in more. I don't think they're going to play with their food as much this series. I have Boston in 5. I think the Heat run out of gas in this series. I think they steal one, random game, Jimmy Butler, 50-point game, whatever. But
game 2.
I think game 2 in Boston, everyone's like, Jimmy Butler, Himmy Butler got this. Oh, he is in his bag, going to steal his cornbread, whatever. All that stupid crap.
He's deep in his bag like the fries are at the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to see those stupid social media posts and headlines, whatever.
And the picture of him with the dreads, the fake dreads.
My goodness. But give me Celtics in 5. I think Tatum comes out. I think he's going to have a monster series. Robert Williams is going to have to play big in this one against Bam. Al Horford has to stop shooting the basketball for once because he apparently cannot make a shot ever again. Like, he's it's like Trey Jones in the 2019 tournament when Virginia Tech was like, go ahead, shoot.
Yeah, exactly, given like the ole over here.
Yeah.
If you're Boston, you got to be careful, though, because Miami's going to want to muck it up. They're going to want to slow down the pace. They're going to want to get you out of your sets, knock guys off their spot, make you start your offense 10 seconds late. Gabe Vincent was pressing full court last series the whole time. If you're Boston, you got to just overcome that. Marcus Smart needs to be consistent with the ball, strong with the ball. They have Derek White, Brogdon. That's the thing with the Celtics is they have ball handlers that can really kind of combat that Heat pressure they like to put on full court. But you got to be careful of playing down your competition. And if it gets down in the fourth quarter and it's a close game,
that's where it gets interesting.
That's where it gets weird. You gotta do your work early and step on their throat because you're clearly the better team if you're Boston. But the Heat are going to want to run at their pace, and you can't let that happen. You cannot let that happen. You got to play at your pace. You can't let the Heat can dictate the pace of the game.
That's the one thing I am really concerned about in this series is the coaching difference. Can Joe Mazzulla outcoach Eric Spoelstra? No, he can't. Eric Spoelstra is easily a top 3, top 4 coach in this league right now. He's coaching out of his mind. He's outcoached everybody in every game so far in this playoffs. And I assume that happens again. I just think the Boston talent and home court advantage wins out in this one.
I think so too. And the Heat have been dynamite, but I just cannot see where the offense comes from. I really can't see.
We say
see
that every series, though.
But where's it going to come from in the series? I just feel like the Tyler.
Where did
Hero
it come from? Where did it come from in Milwaukee? Where did it come from in New York? Where did it's go? Jimmy Butler randomly, the Caleb Martin factor, Max Strus, Gabe Vincent's due for a 30-point game for some reason. Bam's going to have a double double every night. Like we posted that TikTok yesterday. How do the Heat keep winning?
At the end of the day, this is a successful season for the Heat, no matter what. At this point.
Oh my gosh, yes.
But Boston is different from New York. New York hadn't been there before. They had guys that were, you know, a little banged up. They hadn't been in that situation before.
But
Boston's
what about
a little different. Yeah, so that Giannis was hurt. I see now that series, Giannis
but
was
that's
hurt.
That's what I'm saying. Like
Middleton.
I'm even saying Boston in five, and I feel confident about that? No, but I just, you know, what the basketball I've watched, especially in that last game seven, I can't get that taste out of my mouth from Boston where they looked so good in that second half. No, Jason Tatum's not going to have 50 points and shoot like Steph Curry every game, but they just have so much more talent, and I just think that momentum carries into this series and they win this series. And I think the Celtics still make the finals, but like my mind says the Nuggets, my heart says the Lakers.
I think you hit it on the head there with the Heat Celtics. I think the Heat just run out of gas. I think they'll put up a fight. I think they'll steal one, maybe two games. I think it'll be a 6-game series. But I think they just don't have enough. And Jimmy Butler can only do so much. Lowry, you know, Lowry's going to have like multiple 20-point games if they want a chance. Bam's going to have to be a complete defensive anchor. I just don't see him putting it together for that many games to win 4-7. So I think they run out of gas. I really think it ends up being Lakers-Celtics, Carter. I think it's destined and written in the stars. I really do. And Denver's a well-oiled machine, and I'm scared to pick against them. But I think it's going to be LA-Boston. I really do. And that'll be one for the ages. That'll be one for the ages.
Yeah, and then it just makes too much sense for it to be LA-Boston. It really does. And you know what also makes too much sense? The Spurs are getting Victor Wembanyama tonight. Like, that makes too much sense.
It does. Oh, Greg Popovich, we'll let you have one more run with the superstar. No, they had David Robinson and Tim Duncan. They don't deserve this. Who did we have? We had Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Carter.
Noah
That's
Vonleh,
who we had.
Cody Zeller.
Kaminsky. We know what we need to do.
We almost fleeced Danny Ainge in the worst trade of all time, giving up like 5 first-round picks, but we kept Frank Kaminsky to make it look like we are the worst team of all time.
I need to burn my Frank Kaminsky jersey in a sacrificial ritual tonight.
Interesting. I texted you. I said I'm going to bring a bunch of cash to the airport, and I'm just going to tip a bunch of people for good luck.
I don't think that's a bad idea at all. You can't get enough good karma in the world. And Carter, us Hornets fans need it tonight.
We need it so bad. Please pray for us if you're listening. This will be out. This should be out very soon. I'm gonna put this out as soon as I can. It should be out before the lottery, around Tuesday afternoon. Pray for us.
I have a hot take. So clearly, I want the number one pick for Charlotte. But if they can't get number one, I want number three because I don't want the Hornets to pick the wrong one out of Scoot Henderson and Brandon Miller.
Top three.
That listen to this though, the LaMelo draft. You think if the Hornets got number two, they weren't going to draft Wiseman?
Oh, 100%. They were drafting Wiseman.
So that was a blessing in disguise. I want one or three. I don't want the pressure because the Hornets have shown they can mess it up.
That's
clearly
a loser mentality though. I guess we are a loser.
That's just a realistic mentality. It's a realistic mentality, Carter. Come on.
But yeah. Last thing. Finals picks and give me the game. Who wins?
Give me the Lakers Celtics. Like I said. Give me Lakers in six. Well, or seven. No, six. Give me Lakers in six. Lakers in six in the finals over Boston.
This is getting clipped at Lakers in six.
Lakers in six is what I want.
Yeah. Celtics game seven in Boston.
Versus who?
Lakers. It's going to be the Lakers.
Didn't you just pick the Nuggets? You want to call me Mitt Romney? Am I Mitt Romney, Carter? Oh, okay. Who's flip-flopping now? You're heading to the beach. Get your flip-flops out.
They're already packed. I don't know. Like I said, my mind's telling me the Nuggets. My heart's telling me the Lakers. It's hard.
You're a Bron sexual. We get it. You come out of the closet.
No, I think the NBA is the biggest Bron sexual. That's why I say that.
TV rights deal, man. I'm telling you. They want to boost those ratings.
I know. And I'm the one who freaking said that theory, too. Oh, my gosh. You know what? As good luck and have good karma tonight, I'm going to say the NBA is not rigged. I'm going to go Nuggets Celtics, and I'm taking the Celtics in 7.
Lakers Celtics, give me the Lakers in 6. Give me Anthony Davis Finals MVP.
Adam Silver is probably the coolest guy on earth. Like, he is awesome. He's so handsome.
Oh, I know. And the city of Charlotte loves him and would welcome him with open arms.
I would build a statue for him. Like, he's such a good guy.
I'd make sure the statue, I'd make sure that bald head was polished up real nice.
Yeah, his glasses.
Gleaming in the sun. Yeah.
He definitely doesn't look like an eye doctor.
No, of course not.
Anyhow, anything else draft lottery tonight? I mean, we can touch on it real quick. Like, if you don't get top three, you're in a bad spot.
If you don't get what?
Top three.
Oh, yeah. That is, it's rough after that because there's no surefire guarantee. One of those top four teams, probably Charlotte, is going to get screwed. It's hard to find a diamond in the rough. There's no surefire thing after pick three. Even Brandon Miller, I think, there's some question marks, but I think he's pretty pro-ready.
I think there are quite more question marks about Brandon Miller than I think. That's why I want Scoot Henderson at 2, but
yeah,
I would rather have Scoot Henderson as a Hornets fan. Like, everyone's getting high on Cam Whitmore, but I'm not a big Cam Whitmore guy. He didn't show me enough in college to believe that. Like, why would, if you were so bad in college, why do I all of a sudden believe you're going to be good in the NBA? Like, Grady Dick is a weird one. Like, he's going to get all the Franz Wagner comparisons.
That's such a Hornets player. That's such a Hornets player.
I know. We need to look this up real quick. I can edit this part out if we need to, but I want to look up, like, the top three odds, because what's the lowest we can fall to? So the Hornets can't fall below 8. So when you're watching the lottery tonight, once that 9th pick comes, then all things are on the table. We could get 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and hopefully it's 1.
If the Hornets are anywhere in the 6 through 8 range, Grady Dick, you're a Charlotte Hornet.
100,000%.
I mean, they are salivating to get him on the team.
Realistic guess, it's the Spurs tonight, right? Getting the number one pick.
I think so. And I think, as far as I've seen a lot of people ranking, like, landing spots for Wembanyama, like, oh, where do you want to see him end up? What's the best situation for him? The best franchise structure? Sure, the Spurs have a history of winning. They've been awful the last few years. They don't have a crazy good young core. They have a couple good pieces, but it's not like he's set up for prime success there. And Charlotte is always at the bottom of people's lists, and I don't understand why. I get it. Michael Jordan's thinking about selling the team. The structure's a little bit weird, the front office. There's some good pieces in Charlotte. I don't know why they're on the bottom of everybody's potential landing spots list. Cut Charlotte a break. I think if Wembanyama goes there, yeah, there might be some question marks as to, like, the maturity of the team and whatever. That'd be one of the most fun teams to watch, and I think there's a real chance for some success there.
That we will get immediately, like, 15, 20 national TV games next season.
Oh, Wembanyama will be praised next year like none other. It'll be unbelievable.
It's going to be crazy. We're going to be – it's when watch him, like, get hurt early on, knock on wood, and, like, it's the Spurs get him, and we're watching – the Spurs are just on ESPN national TV, but without Wembanyama yet.
Oh, my gosh. That would be awful.
And it's just like, Spurs Bulls up next on ESPN. All right. Anything else for today?
I want to mention one thing. So, draft lottery tonight, Wembanyama, odds on number one pick. In the gambling world, I think I'm going to place a small wager on Scoot Henderson or Brandon Miller to win Rookie of the Year, just in case Wembanyama gets hurt.
I like Scoot Henderson a lot. I like Scoot Henderson a lot. As long as Scoot Henderson does not end up in Houston, I like Scoot Henderson to win Rookie of the Year a lot.
Yeah, because I think Wembanyama, there's a good chance he misses part of the year, or, like, they play it super, super safe with him so he doesn't qualify or doesn't play enough games.
Scoot Henderson feels like a Piston. Him and Cade.
They just got Jaden Ivey, though. That'd be a weird fit.
Ivey off the bench. Maybe they play Scoot at the 3.
But, dude, you got Corey Joseph, too. You can't forget about him.
Do they have any NBA draft lottery odds?
I don't know. I was looking. I didn't see any yet.
I didn't see any either. But
I did see on DK the Hornets are +650 to get the number one pick.
I kind of like that sprinkle. But anyhow, that's fine. I may go live on my phone while sitting on the plane, boarding the plane for this number one pick. We'll see. I'll let you know my situation. But anyhow, that'll do it from us. Subscribe. Go subscribe to the podcast.
Send the good vibes. Send the good vibes.
Go follow us on all social media. I'm sure if you're listening right now, you probably saw us on social media and you saw one of our clips. Make sure to follow on there as well. But thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us today. Subscribe, rate, review. Follow us on Twitter @CarterBA, @Connor_Sparrow, @CarterCast on all social media. Confirmed with the stats department. We are on Truth Social, apparently.
Oh, very nice. So, love to see it.
So if you're a Trump fan, I guess you can, we'll take anybody.
All are welcome. All are welcome to the melting pot of the Carter Cast.
Yeah, we don't discriminate. We don't care who you are. But thank you so much for listening. We'll see y'all next time. We'll do. We'll be back next week. I'll be recording from the beach. I'll be sitting on the deck at the beach recording. I don't take time off, Connor. I don't take time off.
That is dedication right there, and that's what it takes for a good host / founder of the podcast.
Yeah, you're going to see me doing an interview with Andy Reid, Hawaiian shirt on and sunglasses, on the deck of a looking over the Atlantic Ocean, sitting there talking to some coach about, oh, what do you guys think what's going to happen next season?
Love it. That's great vibes.
I know. We grind here. Thank you for listening. We'll see y'all next time. Bye-bye.